on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to another episode of Invest Talk. As you are well aware, we are now into the fourth quarter, and it won't be long until we're all taking a little bit of a well-deserved rest and break with our families over this holiday season. And I think I can speak for each and every one of us when I say that this year has moved so quickly. And with that whiplash of time, it is easy for us as people with things going on in our lives to lose focus. But now is not the time to do so. You've seen thus far this year how quickly things can change, how narratives can change, how the market can therefore change, and what that does to your portfolio. And so each and every day through 2025, all the way going back to the 90s, really, we here at Invest Talk have hopefully been a part of your financial journey. And that's because our objective for each podcast, each radio program, is to help make you a better and more informed investor. We do that by bringing a mixture of educational and actionable material to the table. But the most important part of this show is dictated by you, our listener, through your finance and investment questions. And because that's the case, before we go and talk it up about today's market performance, before we run down those show topics, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, this is Mike from Dallas. I'm curious what you think of Copart, CPRT, from a long-term hold basis. Thank you.
Well, Mike, Copart is an online vehicle auctioneer and remarketing service. They operate in 11 countries, the US, Canada, UK, Germany, among them, with over 200 physical locations and a pretty large inventory of vehicles. They sell salvage and used wholesale vehicles via online auction through their virtual bidding to buyers, not necessarily like you and me. Yes, they do sell to members of the public, but they also sell to insurers, repairers, rebuilders, and exporters. And this business model is largely fee-based. Most of the revenue is derived from service fees for this auctions, for listings, for transaction support, and even for storage and services related to closing out once the auctions have been successful. And also occasionally, instead of payment through fees, we'll take ownership of at least a small part of the vehicle to start to unlock value for itself. Now, it's had pretty strong revenue and earnings growth. In fiscal Q2 2025, they reported 14% year-over-year revenue growth, gross profit up 13%, and net income rose by about 19%. Yet, year-to-date, company's down 22.93%, down 16.17% over the past 52 weeks. And some of this may in part be because, well, valuation metrics looked a little high. Now, it's currently sitting at 25.6 times forward-looking earnings, 4.7 times price-to-book value, which is below its average, closer to the lower end of its range. It was as expensive as 43.6 times forward-looking earnings. But again, the stock's underperformed, right? They've fallen relative to their 52-week high. They were down multiple days this month by over 1%. And so in spite of this fee revenue, in spite of the scale that they appear to have, there's a bit of a risk here. Now, I mentioned the biggest risk, right? You're seeing a bit of valuation compression here. Margins are trimming down, or rather staying relatively stable. In spite of that, though, return on equity has fallen a bit from 20.2% to 18.6%. They've also had a bit of competitive disruption, right? The competing auction companies, remarketing platforms, and really just a change in how wrecked used cars are processed. And so what I see here is, again, repricing based on valuation, but also a bit of a repricing based on growth. Growth still looks good, but it has certainly slowed a bit, right? It's only about 10% is what you're supposed to see from 2024 to 2025, where the five-year average is 16.1%. So, you know, I would let this thing reprice quite a bit from here. Looks like it's on a consistent downward trend after that big drop off in April and seems to be trying to find some level of support. I would wait. I would watch. I do like the business idea, just don't think now is the right time. That is Copart Inc., ticker CPRT. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this headline, recession by zip code. Why 22 states are already feeling the downturn. In that segment, we will look into how 22 U.S. states may already be in a recession and what it could mean for you. We'll also touch on how emerging markets are doing pretty well. One of the biggest stock rallies in the past 15 years. Gold, speaking of rallying, gold topped 4,000. We'll talk about what that means, why that is. And should we have time at the end of the show, the parent company of the New York Stock Exchange is set to invest $2 billion in Polymarket. What does all that mean? What does all that mean for risk in the market as well? We also have some voice calls ready to play, including one on where to invest if you're a young guy, and another on the Fair Isaac Corporation, ticker FICO, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel, and hopefully some live calls throughout the show. We're going to do a break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk Voice Bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. Up next, today's market activity.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think is a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
OKE is simple. We like the business. I will say we've trimmed it a bit and cut it as a lower weighting.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
You know your business inside and out. Gusto knows payroll, compliance, and benefits as well, so you don't have to. Sounds like a match made in heaven, right? Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all in one, remote friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Gusto helps you save time with automated tools built right in. Offer letters, onboarding materials, direct deposit, and more. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it. Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Get direct access to certified HR experts to help support you through any tough HR situation. It's quick and simple to switch to Gusto. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/investtalk and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/investtalk. One more time, gusto.com/investtalk.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today before we move any further in this show. U.S. stocks finished a bit lower overall. They did claw back a little from where they were headed earlier in the day, but the Dow finished down 20 basis points, S&P 500 down 38, NASDAQ down 67, Russell 2000 down 1.12%. In fact, S&P 500 broke a streak of 7 straight gains, and those indices, S&P, NASDAQ, Russell 2, all came off of their Monday record closes. Some of the worst performers, software, on the back of the news out of Oracle, HDDs, semis among the worst performers, builders, autos, travel and leisure, apparel and accessories, also pretty poor performers on the day. It wasn't all terrible outperformers on the day, included staples, hospitals, managed care, P&C insurers, and industrial metals. On the bond side, treasuries a bit firmer across the curve. Yields look to be down about 3 to 4 basis points on multiple maturities. Same time, dollar index was up 60 basis points, extending some of that strength we saw on Monday. Gold up 70 as well. Or rather, dollar was up 60, gold was up 70. Gold ending above the 4,000 an ounce level for the first time today. While that digital gold, Bitcoin down 3.2%, and crude oil settled down about 10 basis points. Really a big story, because there wasn't much, is select tech underperformance. There was a big tailwind earlier in the week on Monday, right, when AMD and OpenAI announced their deal. But there's a bit more scrutiny today. You have talk on the street focusing on bubble concerns, on the lack of return on investment, on productivity concerns, on the circularity of a lot of these investments, customers investing in the companies in which they are selling products to, or vice versa. Then you add on top of that, right, you had a bit of flagged information regarding the financial challenges Oracle's facing in renting out its NVIDIA chips. Small caps, another standout as of late, really underperforming today on the Fed easing narrative. And so you see this pullback coming despite the lower rate backdrop. Elsewhere, it was pretty quiet. There's a catalyst vacuum, if you will, a macro catalyst vacuum amidst this government shutdown. Remember that a lot of the reporting doesn't come out when the government shut down. And so there's a waiting game right now for the start of Q3 earnings next week. Now, we did get some things. We got the latest New York Fed consumer survey, which showed a slight raise in year-ahead inflation expectations, though the near-term optimism improved a bit, and still some signals of a better labor market outlook. Now, looking ahead, September FOMC minutes will be the highlight on Wednesday, while a couple Fed governors are scheduled to speak as well. It's going to be a Treasury auction of 10-year notes on Wednesday as well. We get a pre-recorded video from Jerome Powell, as well as more Fed speak on Thursday. And Friday, we'll bring the University of Michigan consumer sentiment and inflation expectations for September, along with some more Fed comments. Not a lot of macro activity, not a lot of macro results until the government opens back up. Every day, it seems like we are receiving questions over on our YouTube channel. If you wanted to go check out YouTube, you know, we've taken a little step back. We're trying to figure out how we can best give content to not just you, the listener, but you, the viewer. So stay tuned. We got some things in the works. We're going to freshen that up for you all. But while you're over there looking at one of our existing videos, because we do have a lot of evergreen material that I think is applicable all the time, if you want to leave a question over there on the comment section, we get to those as soon as we possibly can. And this question came in from Golan Lev. It's on ticker PGR. It says, I'm looking to add some more of Progressive. Financially, they're looking good and have solid support around 235. However, I noticed some of their senior level workers sold stock recently. What is your take on this? Is it a good opportunity to buy some more? Well, Progressive is one of the major players in the U.S. auto insurance industry. They do property and casualty insurance as well. Their main lines of operation, right? They got their personal auto and specialty lines where they underwrite auto policies for cars, motorcycles, RVs, and various high risk lines. They have their commercial and business insurance. So think of auto and liability coverage for trucking businesses. They also sell via independent agents over the phone and increasingly through their digital platform. Now, a key metric is its combined ratio, right? A measure of the underwriting profitability. In Q2 2025, Progressive posted a combined ratio of 86.2%. 8.8%, outperforming greatly what the estimates would be. Now, growth in premiums in that same period looks like they increased about 18% year over year. Revenue growth up 15.7%, slightly below some expectations. Now, these trends, right, are very important. Not just the underwriting trends, but the premium growth and retention trends. That's something that we have to watch going forward. What are claims costs? If you're an auto insurer, if you're rebuilding cars, if you're paying for rebuilt cars, your margins are going to slip if the cost of rebuilding those cars goes up, right? It just makes common sense. Your input cost of fixing something going up is going to erode some margins. That's something that we certainly have to be concerned about with not just Progressive, but across the board. There's also a bit of liability law changes in multiple states that is something that they should be, could be a bit concerned about. In terms of valuation, though, it's fine. 14 times price to forward-looking earnings, sitting below, at the low end of its five-year average. It's underperformed its industry by about 4% this year, but it's a pretty solid performer year in and year out. I think what is worrisome for me is how much exposure they have to auto insurance. Right, that is the primary driver of this company. Right? These personal lines make about 84% of their business. And so in this rising cost environment, margins can continue to erode, which is what you've seen a little bit, and you could continue to see a bit further. Couple that with a little bit of forward guidance lowering, downgrading over the past couple months. I mean, it's not all bad, right? They got solid cash flow, pretty stable profitability, and really very little debt. Either way, I think Progressive is a good company. I think that maybe given what's going on from a pricing perspective, I would be a little hesitant to add more at these levels. Regardless of what insiders are doing, people sell all the time inside. Wouldn't read too much into that. That's Progressive Corporation, ticker PGR. As we move to a new break, let me tell you about a new series that has debuted on our Invest Talk channel. It's called Invest Talk Innovators. Our latest episode, Justin spoke with Anthony Katz, the visionary founder of Hyperice. To watch the full interview, visit our Invest Talk YouTube channel and look for Invest Talk Innovators.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today is about a dirty word in economics, recession. And we're going to look at recessions by zip code because it may be the case that 22 U.S. states may already be in a recession. And so depending on where you live, you may be feeling the economy a bit differently. Now, Moody's Analytics chief economist Mark Zandi says that the U.S. economy is teetering on the edge of a contraction. He estimates 22 states and Washington, D.C. are already in recession-like conditions, marked by job losses, weakening labor market, but also weakening output. Another 13 states, he says, are what he would call treading water, leaving only a minority showing clear growth and momentum. Now, Zandi warns that the national economy is on the precipice, right? Vulnerable to even the most modest of external shocks. California, New York, these are the big swing states. If either slips further, it could tip the U.S. into a recession. And he's not the only one that believes this. UCLA's Anderson School of Business separately noted that a California recession is now plausible, reinforcing that concern. So what has really led to these drags? Well, Zandi points to the tariff policy as a key source of drag. It's injected uncertainty into supply chains. It has frozen a bunch of expansion plans and just generally increased layers of uncertainty that has made businesses want to hire less, pause projects. And so at the same time, created a bit of a demand issue in the labor market and in economic growth as well. Now, within DC, right, you're going to see a lot more of a recessionary environment because of some deepened DOGE cuts. But the overarching theme across the board here is that a pretty weak labor force Or rather, the weak labor force growth nationwide has compounded the strain, especially in manufacturing and farm-heavy states. Now, this is just the opinion of this economist and the UCLA Anderson School. Certainly, there are other economists that disagree. Regions Bank's Richard Moody cites pretty solid consumer spending, business investment, and 3.8% GDP growth for Q3. Now, a little complicated, right? We're still in a transitionary period in terms of global trade. I generally also don't like to look at one quarter of growth anyway. I think smoothing it over multiple quarters gives you a more clear picture. But I do take his point, right? Consumer spending has been very strong. Business investment has not been as weak as many believed it would be. But while GDP and spending look firm, job market softening signals a deeper structural issue. And we keep getting reinforcing data here. And as growth has kind of been a bit different across different industries, the weakness here is more acute in certain places. Agriculture, mining, light manufacturing, industries hit hardest by tariffs and sluggish transport demand. And so I think people forget. This is an important story because I think people forget, right? I think people misunderstand what it means for the economy to be good. The old adage in economics is a good economy means that money is moving around, but it doesn't mean that money is moving to you. And so what we saw, in spite of inflation, was pretty strong economic growth, and we've seen it so far this year as well. And so when people feel their personal situation is bad, it doesn't necessarily mean that the economy is struggling broadly. But what we're seeing here now is starting to show a bit of struggle in various areas. And because of the way the economy is set up, because different states can feel things differently, different products come from different places, agricultural heavy places, manufacturing heavy places, the high level doesn't give people a general understanding of what they are feeling in front of them. Given these dynamics, it'll be interesting to see as we head into the end of the year and into next year, as we start to possibly see more inflationary effects of tariffs, whether or not consumer spending and all the areas of good within the economy can continue to prop it up. Let's keep things moving. Drop in another fresh listener question. May not be able to answer it, but at least we can hear it.
Hello. I have saved up around $80,000 and I'm 21 years old, and I was wondering what I should do to invest my money and what I should do to make it grow. I was considering buying or putting money down on a house or a townhouse or a condo in my area, but Los Angeles seems very expensive. I was wondering if maybe there's another state or another city where I could possibly invest in property, or whether or not this is the right time to invest in property. Thank you. Hope to hear it on the next podcast.
It is not the right time to invest in property. I think I've probably said that more on this show than I can count. It is the most expensive time to buy property relative to renting property in like the entire history of us tracking this. And as somebody who's in their 20s, you can take on a lot more risk. Property is fine. I think we're all warped by our parents buying houses for 10 bucks and now they're worth 10 million. But historically speaking, equities outperform. They're highly liquid. They have far more benefits. If you live in your house and you sell your house, you got to go buy another house. And you got to find somebody to buy your house. It's great that you're saving. Fantastic. I think the best place that you can start is starting to understand equity markets, starting to understand the benefits of buying stocks, and start by putting it in a broadly diversified ETF. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story, OpenAI's strategy of striking enormous multi-year hardware deals with both AMD and NVIDIA, secure its AI infrastructure and prevent a chip monopoly, but it introduces financial risk. That's tomorrow. For now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls. Did you know a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? As soon as you try the True Age plus True Health test by True Diagnostic, it will show you things you've never learned from a standard doctor's visit or your annual physical. The True Age plus True Health test is a simple at-home kit that gives you powerful insights so you can feel better longer. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. TrueAge measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number. It shows you how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations that will give you the largest bang for buck improvements to your health and to slow down aging. It's all done at home with just a quick, painless finger prick. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit truediagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. For example, Claude found connections across 50 plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone: financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/invest.
Invest Talk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the Invest Talk YouTube channel and look for Invest Talk Innovators. Luke Guerrero is here now and ready to answer your finance and investment questions. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Will from San Diego, who's asking about trailing stops and streaming on AM 1220.
Hello.
Hey, Will, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks for taking my call.
Given the comments that you have made during this hour,
you mentioned possibly that some states are in recession or approaching recession. So I'm wondering if it's a good idea to put trailing stops on some of my winners.
Well, you know what? I think generally a good idea to put trailing stops on your winners, especially the ones that you're letting run, and then revisit them. As for those who are listening who don't know what a trailing stop is, it is a dynamic stop loss, right, that automatically adjusts as a trade moves in your favor. So if you are long something, it's going to move up. If you're short something, it's going to move down. And so you set it as a fixed percentage or a dollar amount. And so as the asset moves favorably, it moves up with it. Now, it won't move back down, right? So if you set a 5% stop at $100, right, sets it at $95, if it goes up, continues to climb. Now, the benefit here is it removes a bit of emotion from some of these selling decisions. It enforces some pretty strict discipline as well. But it also depends on what the asset is, right? In volatile markets, which is not really what we're seeing too much here, tight trailing stops can trigger a pretty premature exit from your position. So it does work really well in trending markets like what we're seeing when you want to let those winners run, which it sounds like you want to do. So, you know, here's a little advice. If it's a highly volatile asset, just widen those trailing distances out a bit. If it is a less volatile asset, you can keep it a bit tighter. But overall, I think because it enforces that discipline, using trailing stops is a pretty solid idea. Thanks for the call.
Great. Thank you.
Now, let's slip in another fresh caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi there, Justin and Luke. A longtime listener to your show. I love everything you do and educate me on. Been listening for many, many years. This is Matt from the Minneapolis area. I have a quick question on a stock I've been following a lot lately, and it seems to consistently do good, I feel, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on it. The stock is ticker FICO, the Fryzik Corporation, which, you know, monitors the credit scores and stuff. I don't know. It is expensive, but it does seem to be jumping here. Today that I'm sending you the message, it's up like $60-something dollars here in one day. Does it always jump like this? I'm sure not, but it does seem to consistently go up. Is this worth buying or having some? I'll be listening to the podcast to hear your answers. Thank you. Have a great day.
The Fryzik Corporation, is ticker FICO, is best known for those FICO scores, right? The credit scoring system used by a vast majority of U.S. lenders to assess whether a customer, is creditworthy. But it also provides decision management and analytical software to financial institutions, earning most of its revenue by licensing those scores, that software, and data analytics services. Now, they recently announced a new direct licensing model for mortgage scores. And so what that does is it allows tri-merge resellers who aggregate these credit bureau data to license FICO scores without going through your providers, right? Your Equifax, your Experian, or your TransUnion. So it shifts margin power. Instead of paying embedded markups via credit bureaus, lenders or resellers might now get more transparent pricing by getting rid of the middleman. Another thing that happened for them is earlier in 2025, the Federal Housing Finance Agency approved use of VantageScore 4.0, the competing scoring system jointly controlled by the big credit bureaus for mortgages sold to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Year to date, this company is down 5.59% over the past 52 weeks. It's down about 3.86%. And that's in spite of a 15% revenue growth in Q2, driven in part by surging mortgage-related licensing activity and platform revenue. It's pretty strong fundamentally. I mean, in terms of debt, it's got about $2 billion in debt on a $44 billion market cap company. Its cash flow has been steadily improving. Its valuation is kind of high, but not as high as it has been. I mean, it's still above its five-year averages here, sitting at 50.6 times price to forward-looking earnings, sitting at 58 times price to cash flow, 23.6 times price to sales. And revenue growth has been pretty consistent, sitting about 8.2% on an annualized basis, while margins, and they tend to be within financial data industry, financial services, pretty solid, right? Growing from 29.9% net margin to about 36.6% this year. EBITDA margin from 43.5% to 55.4%. Now, there are some key risks out there, right? How quickly can the new direct licensing model be adopted? Is this going to lead to essentially revenue cannibalization? Shifting from intermediary-based licensing to direct could reduce volumes, it could compress fees. And what is the response from credit bureaus going to be? They may develop counter strategies, bundle services, pricing adjustments, legal responses. Anytime you have a big shift like this within an industry, it tends to not go as smooth. Now, it's been really strong since 2019, but it hasn't moved much over the past year. The momentum is fading and it's a bit expensive. So for now, I'd keep it on my watch list. It did jump a bit on some of these announcements, but either way, I mean, the trend just is not strong here from a momentum and growth perspective. So great company, solid balance sheet. Keep it on my watch list for now. See how things start to shake up as they're trying to rework their main business line. That is the Fryzik Corporation, ticker FICO. Now, investors have been absolutely pouring money into developing world assets because the dollar is becoming weaker and cheap valuations have sparked the biggest emerging market surge in over 15 years. The MSCI Emerging Market Index is up 28% this year, its strongest run since 2009, while local currency government bonds tracked by JP Morgan have gained 16%. That easily outpaces developed market equities, where returns have been closer to 17%, underscoring a pretty sharp rotation away from U.S. dominance. Now, after a decade and a half of underperformance, sentiment's flipping, and the driving force is a weakening dollar. A soft dollar makes it easier for developing countries to service their dollar-denominated debt. It eases financial pressures for much of the world. And the Fed's pivot to rate cuts has also fueled fresh demand for these high-yielding local currency bonds in various markets, from South Africa to Brazil. In Asia, falling inflation has helped sustain pretty attractive yields from Thailand to Malaysia, even with relatively low policy rates. And so equity investors are chasing this AI boom that is global through emerging market chip makers, pushing Korea's KOSPI and Taiwan's TAIEX to record highs. Taiwan Semiconductor alone now represents roughly 11% of the MSCI benchmark, a reflection of just really how central AI hardware has become to EM performance. Now, when you think about that, it may be that there are broader structural issues. If breadth is narrow, if these companies have subsumed the index, is this emerging markets doing well? Is this a select few companies doing well? Now, some managers see the shift as symbolic, right? The dusk of U.S. exceptionalism, with global investors rediscovering value beyond Wall Street. But valuation gaps, they're still pretty darn wide. EM stocks traded about 14 times forward earnings. In the U.S., S&P 500, it's 23 times. It leaves a bit of room for further re-rating. Now, India's been a pretty notable underperformer here, where lofty valuations and weaker than expected earnings have kept gains pretty muted, even amidst a broader rally. But as you can see, this year has been a year where, especially accounting for the dollar's return, U.S. stocks have frankly underperformed their international counterparts. And so as more investors are de-dollarizing, emerging markets stand to benefit. Alrighty, how about another YouTube comment section question? This one on TEAM. The ticker is TEAM. Let me pull this up here on my handy dandy screen. And it says, would love to hear your thoughts on TEAM as a long-term buy and hold. Seems like a good entry point, or should I keep it on my watch list? TEAM is Atlassian. I've never been able to pronounce this company's name, which is funny because we use it. It's a holding company which engages in providing team collaboration and productivity support. They have Confluence is what we use it for. We use project management through it as well. Now, they've been strongly pushing into AI, cloud, and platform integration, trying to evolve from really a tools vendor to more of a workspace productivity platform. Now, they recently agreed to acquire DX, Developer Intelligence Platform, for about $1 billion in cash and stock. And what they're hoping to do is extend their analytics into engineering and AI workflows. It also acquired the browser company for $610 million. Again, an AI push for it. And so it's really signaling this shift here. They're aiming not just to host projects, but to embed itself deeper within workflows, trying to make its tools more sticky and have a bit higher value. But anytime you're doing integration, especially from acquisitions, you run the risk of poor execution, right? This is what execution risk is, especially when trying to do it multiple fronts at the same time. Now, they're pushing for a bunch of layoffs, support, efficiency. They have some pretty aggressive cost cutting. But I mean, the company's done pretty poorly. And that's aside from the fact that I really like their platforms. We use them. I like them. Year to date, it's down 38.32%, down 10.39% over the past 52 weeks, down 30.52% over the past 3 months. It is a perennial issuer of shares, up from $250 million in 2021 to $265 million. It doesn't pay a dividend. It's got very little debt, $1.2 billion on effectively a $40 billion market cap company. It's got a little bit of short interest out there. Now, there is some insider selling. And as I mentioned earlier, should not be your decision point broadly, but the whole industry is continuing to shift more towards these AI-enhanced productivity tools. And what they're trying to do is advance with them, get more recurring, more sticky revenue, but they don't have it yet. And so given that there's really no positive trend here, and with that execution risk, I think I'd probably keep it on my watch list again, in spite of me liking their products. That is Atlassian, I'll never know how to pronounce it, Corp, ticker TAM, sorry. You know what? Let's grab another caller question now.
Hello, Justin and Luke, Chris from New York. I had a question about Bank of America and JP Morgan. I currently own Bank of America. It's roughly 3% of my position. I'm up about 80%. It's done pretty well for me over the years. But I'm looking to possibly sell out of that position and invest that into JP Morgan. Looks like they're probably the top company, and then their ROI looks a lot better than Bank of America at this point. Mind to get your thoughts on that. I look forward to your answer on the podcast. Thank you. Bye.
Bank of America, JP Morgan, two of the largest financial institutions in the world. JP Morgan, an $870 billion market cap company. Bank of America, bit smaller, $389 billion market cap company. Year to date, they both performed pretty well. Bank of America up 14.43% year to date. JP Morgan up 28.36% year to date. Now, Bank of America, again, one of the largest by assets, primarily driven net interest income. Interest rate tailwinds have been very beneficial for them. Their trading revenue has been good. Their efficiency in their digital banking has been very good. Their credit and loan loss has been top of the industry. But if I got to be honest, JP Morgan's JP Morgan. I think if you're going to own one of these two banks, you are correct in wanting to go towards JPM. Their scale, their diversification, their global reach, their exposure to capital markets gives them potential for higher returns. Their trading revenue was up 15% year over year. Their investment banking fees grew 7% year over year. And so we're moving into a phase here where you're starting to see, and it could be because rates are coming down a bit, or the projected path of cutting is coming down a bit. But we're moving into an area where, from a capital markets perspective, M&A activity is picking up, IPO activity is picking up, investment banking fees, revenues stand to pick up a bit. And so although these are both massive banks, large banks, wide, diverse loan books, diverse asset bases, structurally probably some of the safest of the financial institutions, I just think given how JP Morgan has grown over the past decade, Jamie Dimon's kind of a rock star. Given the exposure you're going to get from the commercial investment banking side, as well as a pretty large asset and wealth management business that's going to give you some pretty solid fee revenue, I think moving on from Bank of America, getting that JP Morgan exposure, good way to go. That is JPM and BAC. Thanks for the call. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here, and that's to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Rain or shine, there's always value in the InvestTalk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Kevin calling from Southern California. I'm calling today to ask about a company called Mercado Libre. The ticker is MELI. I have held this company in the past. It's supposed to be like the Amazon of South America, but also does a lot of other things in addition to just the commerce. So I held this stock in the past. I took profits at when it would reach like $900 a share, and then at $1,300 a share, and that I've sold out of it, thinking it would come back down. It took off, and now it's starting to trend back down. I'm trying to see what price you think would be a good entry price if I wanted to start dollar cost averaging back into the stock. I appreciate your thoughts as always. Thanks again.
Mercado Libre. And I practiced saying that during the break about 10 times, is a Latin American powerhouse in e-commerce. They run a marketplace platform. They have logistics and fulfillment infrastructure, digital payment processing, credit and lending, and advertising for merchants. Get this, in Q1 of 2025, they recorded 37% year-over-year revenue growth. 37%. Operating income rose 45% year-over-year. But can you sustain that growth? Right? Unique buyers increased 25% year-over-year. Items sold rose 28% over-year. These are gangbusters numbers here. From the fintech and credit monetization, monthly active users up 31%. Credit portfolio grew 75%. Payment volume, anywhere from 20 to 30% depending on the country that you are looking at. Ad revenue up 26%. It's a solid company is what I'm trying to say here. It's a $109 billion market cap company. It's got $8.8 billion in debt. Cash flow trend looks fantastic. Profit margins have been expanding a bit from 8.4% EBITDA to 14.9% in 2025. Return on equity, taking a bit of a dip, was 51.5%, still a respectable 33.8% this year. Revenue growth, 55.3% on an annualized basis. And you know what? That's not too backloaded either. It's projected to grow from $20 billion in revenue to $28 billion. This year, that's still nearly 50% revenue growth. It's trading at 35 times price to forward-looking earnings, 19.1 times price to book value, 4.5 times price to sales, does not pay a dividend, has a little bit of short interest, but not too much. Now, recently, it's taken a little bit of a hit, maybe some contraction coming back down to earth, given where this company has been. But I mean, it's not a clear downward trend here. There's a big spike up in March, April, Liberation Day, obviously, for many reasons. A company that primarily operates in Latin America stands to gain from a tariff war with the United States if you're trying to sell the same things Amazon is. But since then, it's come down a little bit, right? And so you see this huge run up, up 28.65% year to date, in spite of it being down 13% over the past 3 months. And now it's broke its support, maybe headed a bit downward. I would wait to see. There's a little bit more of a defined trend here. Is it going to revisit some of those March highs? That's kind of where it is right now. Either way, I would definitely start to DCA into this thing pretty soon if you plan to, because, I mean, it's a stellar name. It's got stellar growth. And, I mean, these trends are getting a tear in my eye. These trends are beautiful here. That is Mercado Libre. Ticker M-E-L-I. Fortunately, we don't have much time left for my last talking point. I was going to talk about some gold, but instead, I'm going to direct you to head over to the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk with two T's in YouTube, because although we also have some YouTube classroom series or Invest Talk Innovator series, we should have a fresh webinar up there as well. Very applicable. We talked about AI, and the types of businesses you can invest in outside of those big boys that are have been covered over and over the past couple of years. So dive into that. And if you've got questions, give us a call. 888-99-CHART. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. Today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirements, your kids' college fund, your cat's college fund, your dog's college fund, and whether or not you're really maximizing all of that. Well, at KBB Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews because we want to help bring clarity and confidence to your financial lives. Just go over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. We also would greatly, greatly appreciate, as we thank you for listening, we would greatly appreciate you to tell at least one friend, one family member about our free podcast downloads. It really helps us out, as well as leaving us an iTunes review while you're over there. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.